Fat Guys DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you. So one of my dear friends, we only see each other every couple of years, but Craig Gass is a great comedian, national comedian, does specials, done lots of television shows. I think, not just because he's my pal, but I think he's the best impressionist of my generation.
Whoa.
Do you hear that a lot?
I hear compliments, and compliments are nice. I like compliments.
Did they screw you up?
No, not at all. No, I love hearing a good impression. I love doing impressions. I love hearing a good story. I love telling a good story. And so it's all fun for me. But I find myself doing the same thing with friends of mine who do good impressions. I go, oh, can you just keep doing that?
Yeah.
Can you just keep
yeah.
talking?
Like, you're right. You're right.
It's like,
I don't do impressions, but like most funny people, I can do Simpsons and things like that. Yeah. And when I first started the show, I would do them, and people would stop me at Schnucks and be like, do the Mr. Burns. they don't stop me and go, like, tell that long-form story that was really
right.
You know, it's just like...
They just want you to just...
Pull the trick
talk
out.
Talk as that guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I get that a lot, and then sometimes the people I do impressions of, I'll meet them, and they'll ask me to do the impressions for them. That's happened with almost everybody. And
yeah.
And a couple times it's been awkward. Did I ever tell you about that time I had dinner with Christopher Walken and he hated me?
No.
There was another comedian sitting at the table, Richard Belzer, who just passed away a year ago. Richard Belzer's like the nicest guy to me. Met me once on the Howard Stern show and said, hey, man, we're doing a roast of me. I want you to be a part of it. And I went, oh, I would love to. It was the first roast I ever did. And he's so nice to me that before the roast, there's a big formal dinner. And he said, here, sit with me. Come sit with me. Come sit at my table. And I go, oh, my God, thank you. And he's being so nice and so accommodating. And in the middle of dinner, he goes, Chris, get over here. Chris, you know Craig Gass? Here, come here. No, sit, do you know Craig Gass? Sit between me and Craig. I look up. It's Christopher Walken. He sits down at every seat. There is a prepared meal. There's a steak at every seat, right? So Walken sits down, starts cutting his steak, and his body language is very closed off. He's not looking up. He looks irritable. And and I'm fascinated watching a famous person looking so human and irritated.
Yeah.
And when all of a sudden it comes my way and Belzer goes, all right, listen, I know you're not in a good mood, but listen. I know a lot of people do an impression of you. You gotta watch. And I went, no, Richard, he doesn't. And he goes, no, it's fine. Chris, will you look at me? Chris, look at me. Okay, now look at Craig. He threw his utensils on the table and went, go ahead. And I went, I don't know if this sounds like you or not, but what I try to do is I try to sound as weird as possible. And every once in a while, I say the word cowbell. And Walken picks up the utensils and goes, wow. And then Belzer keeps pushing, goes, hold on. Have you ever heard anybody do Adam Sandler? He's making me go through all these impressions. At some point, he goes, have you ever heard anybody? Remember Sam Kinison?
Oh my God.
And I'm at a dinner table screaming. And Christopher Walken goes, I don't know if you remember this guy, but this guy loved to yell. Oh! Walken cuts me off in the middle of this last impression and goes, listen, I get it. You're talented. Good for you. And I was like, I'm not trying to do this. He is, okay? I'm not pushing the issue. And now, because of moments like that, you just realize when people put you in a situation, you'll have an instinct of like, oh, I don't know if this is a good idea. And now I realize, and I'm sure you've probably been in a situation like this too, socially, where you go, no, I'm not going to do that. You just know certain things.
You feel it.
Yeah. Like, how often are you in a room where one person in the room knows who you are, but mm-hmm. only that one, mm-hmm. and they're trying to explain to everybody else in the room why they should be excited, and you're just standing there going, please shut
up. It's the worst.
please shut up.
Yeah.
Just shut up.
There's no rising to that occasion.
By the way, I do know of one other great Walken story. a comedian friend of mine. Well, his name's Kamal. He was part of a team called the Jerky Boys back in the 90s.
Yeah.
They made prank phone call CDs and stuff. And Kamal has a great story about an actor friend of his who, he's not really an actor. I don't think he's ever gotten a speaking role. But he introduces himself at social events as, hi, I'm Jeff. I'm a background actor. What's your name? How you doing? Like, and a background actor is a very fancy way of saying I've been cast as an extra on shows. Which, hey, it's great money.
Yeah.
But he is always scheming. And apparently he called up Kamal and said, hey, I just found out that there's a place on 26th Street. It's like a scene every Tuesday. Like all these actors and like casting people show up. So why don't we go on Tuesday? I'll bring my demo reel and we'll schmooze. And Kamal thinks this guy is kind of a joke. And he goes, yeah, I'll go. I'll hang out with you. So Tuesday night rolls around. And they roll up to this bar that's supposed to be this kind of cool inside thing. And when they walk up to the bar on 26th Street, laying on the ground with a bloody mouth, it's Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken just got in a bar fight.
Wow.
He's got a bloody mouth. And Kamal stands back and watches his friend Jeff go, Chris, oh my God, are you okay? Wow. Hey, my name's Jeff. I'm an actor. Do you remember a girl named Colleen? She used to work with you. Colleen, she used to do catering. That's my sister. Do you remember her? And Kamal said, I'm standing back there. I'm watching. Christopher Walken's just picking blood up off his mouth. And he goes, what's your name? He said, Jeff. Jeff, I want you to turn around. I want you to get the hell out of my face. Or I'm going to make sure that you disappear. And nobody is ever going to see your face again. And this guy goes, okay, can I give you my acting? No! But all the way to the end, this guy, oh! Yeah, so, I mean, that is what my show is in Westport this weekend, is impressions, people who I do impressions of. And the stories of meeting them. I'm putting out two comedy specials this year.
Nice.
The first one, believe it or not, is just me making fun of Kiss for an hour. That's the whole show.
Boom.
There's been, and I don't think I've ever really gotten into it with you, there's a history that I've had with this band, Kiss, where I started doing an impression of this guy, Gene Simmons. That a friend of mine who works in the music business, he works for the band Aerosmith. His name is John Bianelli. And years ago, I mean like 25 years ago, this guy taught me, he said, if you want to do a Gene Simmons impression, watch Benjamin Netanyahu. It's the same voice.
Hi, this is Benjamin Netanyahu. From Kiss.
It's the same voice, right? So I started learning this impression, and I started on the radio. Every time we'd have a music guest in the studio, it was fun to constantly interrupt the music guests as Gene Simmons and try to sell them crappy Kiss products. I would just throw out like,
that sounds great, but let me interrupt you for 1 second.
And by the way, that guy John who taught me how to do that Gene Simmons impression, he works for Aerosmith. And 15 years ago, Kiss and Aerosmith put a package tour together. They did a co-headlining tour together. And my friend John is in the front office for Vindaloo Music, which is Aerosmith's management company. When the phone rings and the woman answering the phone said, John, you have a call? And he goes, yeah, put it through. And he picks up the phone and he goes, hello. And he hears,
hi, John, this is Gene Simmons. From Kiss.
And my friend John goes, what's up, you fat Jew bastard? And then there's a long pause, and he hears, I'm sorry? And there's another long pause. And John goes, Craig?
Oh.
No, it's not Craig Gass. This is Gene Simmons.
That's nice.
From Kiss. Listen.
And he went right into his question.
That's awesome.
Didn't even faze him. But I start doing the impression of Gene Simmons, and people start coming out of the woodwork to share personal stories who work with Kiss and say, hey, I got a story for you. Maybe you could use this material. Maybe you could use... And then the stories were insane. I just thought, I can't even share these stories. There was one guy who ran a recording studio. He got on the phone with me and said, hey, I'm a huge fan of your impressions, especially your Gene Simmons, because Gene Simmons was the first guy to ever screw me over in this business. He He brought in a band to produce an album at my recording studio. And at the last minute, he tried to switch over into my largest facility for the same amount of money. And he came into the studio and said, "Did you get my message? I want to use Studio A." And I said, "I did. I actually called you back. I don't know if you got my message, but someone is using that studio. I asked them if they would switch, and they said no." And he goes, "Do they know that Gene Simmons from Kiss is here?" And he goes, "You know what? If you want to ask them, you can ask. I'm not going to ask them again, but you're free to ask them yourself if you like." He goes, "Okay, where's Studio A?" Because it's all the way down the hall. It's the last door on the right. Gene Simmons goes walking down the hallway, opens up the door to Studio A, looks inside, and sees the rap group, the Wu-Tang Clan, recording an album, closes the door, comes back up to the front and goes, "Right, we're Studio B." He never even opened his mouth to the Wu-Tang Clan. So I start getting all these personal stories that I start incorporating into the impression. And then one day, and we didn't know this, but all that time that I was doing the Gene Simmons impression and interrupting our music guests, the real Gene Simmons actually started getting hate mail because of the stuff I was saying on the air. And people started yelling at the real Gene Simmons for the things that he was saying on the air. And it wasn't him. It was me doing the impression. Gene Simmons came in and he got on a plane. He flew to New York. He confronted me live on the air and seemed to have a sense of humor about it. And then the next day, I got a phone call from their management company called McGee Entertainment. And they said, "Hey, Craig, we represent Kiss. We wanted to reach out to you and tell you that our singer, Paul Stanley, is your biggest fan." And I said, "What? Paul Stanley knows who I am?" And they said, "Yeah, don't tell anybody this, but Paul Stanley loves when anybody makes fun of Gene Simmons." Like, "Get the hell out of here, are you serious?" Said, "No. As a matter of fact, he's going to call you." And I got a phone call later that day from Paul Stanley asking me if I'd be interested in performing with Kiss. And it was at an event called the Kiss Cruise. And I just said, "So you want me to do stand up? You want me to introduce the band? Like, what did you want me to do?" And he said, "Well, let me ask you a question. How many jokes do you have about Gene?" And I said, "Literally hours." And he said, "You got the gig." And I went, "Really?" He wanted me on that boat to torture
Gene.
He said, "I want you to just rip him just the whole time. Like, I'll pay you whatever you want. Just rip into him." And I said, "All right." And then I went on the boat and I befriended the whole band and their crew. And this bizarre flip happened where their fans took something that I did so seriously that the fans hate me more than Gene Simmons ever did. First day on the ship, I meet a girl who's like the cruise director. She's really upbeat. She's peppy. She's the Julie McCoy of the Kiss cruise. And when she meets me, she goes, "Wait a minute. You're Craig. You're the comedian who does all the voices with the Family Guy. And the. Do you want to do a funny announcement on the ship tomorrow morning?" And I went, oh yeah. Let me ask you a question. If I make an announcement, who's going to hear it?" And she goes, "Well, if you want, we can flip a switch and it'll get piped into every cabin." And I said, "Flip that switch. I know exactly what I want everyone to wake up to tomorrow morning." The next morning, 3,000 of the biggest Kiss fans in the world woke up to, "Bing bong.
Hey, everybody, this is Paul Stanley. And this is Gene Simmons from Kiss. And we have a very important announcement. Do not panic. We have a very important announcement about the Kiss cruise."
At that moment, my friends on the ship said that all the fans stopped in their tracks and were looking at the speakers and smiling until the next words that came out of my mouth.
"We've just hit an iceberg."
Which, keep in mind, when I said we just hit an iceberg, we're in the middle of the Bahamas when I said that. There's no reason for you as an intelligent person to go, "This ship's going down! The ship's going..." We're in the Bahamas.
"But do not panic, because Kiss is going to take care of everybody. We actually have three packages to get you off the ship. First, we have the platinum package, $5,000. We'll put you in a life raft, and you have your own private photo and medical care from Kiss. Then we have the diamond package. Isn't that right, Paul?"
"That's right, the diamond package."
"For $10,000, where we throw you in the ocean with Tommy and Eric. Kiss floats by on a raft. We do a private..."
Everything I said was so stupid, but apparently several Kiss fans ran to the employees and said, So Kiss is going to charge us to get off the boat now? Is that what's going on? They bought into it. So, yeah, it's that idea that using your ability for good or bad is what kind of sets the tone for your life.
Craig is going to be at the Westport the 12th through the 15th. We'll do another segment with him right after this.
Yay!
Welcome back, guys. DGS 325 here with my buddy Craig Gass. He is going to be at Westport Funny Bone. Great place to see a show. Kind of the classic in St. Louis, September 12th through the 15th. Mm-hmm. I know, I feel like I'm showing off my friend to my other friends. I'm doing what people do to you in like grocery stores, but I know you want to talk a little bit more about Kiss, but you have to do Al Pacino. I know Bill Hader has a great Pacino, and Bill does a ton of great impressions. I think it's my favorite impression.
Do you mind if I retell you my favorite Al Pacino story,
please,
which is the one that Alec Baldwin told me?
Please.
Is it okay? Okay. So forgive me for anybody who's heard the story, but I worked on a TV show called Las Vegas with, Alec Baldwin was my partner on the show. And then
James Caan. Yeah.
I was going to say Godfather, James Caan. Every day on that set, Alec Baldwin would knock on my dressing room trailer and come in and say, "Can I hear some more impressions? I love your impressions. Can I hear some more of your impressions?" And I'd always have people visiting me on the set, and I'd go, "Yeah, this is my buddy Dave. He's visiting from St. Louis. Can you do your Tony Bennett for my friend, please?" And he'll do impressions that were incredible. He does a Tony Bennett where you go, "What the hell does Tony Bennett sound like?" And he'll just grab an empty martini glass and go, "Yeah, I'll tell you what. I used to date Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe was a real foxy lady. I once made love to Marilyn for up to 12 hours until the paramedics came along and said, 'Tony, she's gone.'" Like, the material was so dark. Oh, so dark. And so then I would do my Al Pacino for him. And then he kept telling me, I got to tell you my story. And he finally tells me a story about how he almost got in a fist fight with Al Pacino that was all based on an issue with this show that Alec Baldwin participated in. It was a one-man show about Al Pacino's life, that the problem starts with the fact that it was written by Al Pacino's former best friend. And that guy revealed a bunch of personal information that Al Pacino didn't want people to know about. So Baldwin keeps hearing through the grapevine. He says, everywhere he goes, people keep walking up to him going, "Hey, listen, I don't know what this is about, okay? I'm just relaying a message. I just saw Al Pacino at an event last week. He says the next time he sees you, he's going to beat your ass. So I don't know what that is. I'm just passing that along." So Baldwin says that everywhere he goes, keeps hearing that. And then he says, this is when he was still living in L.A., he goes, "One day I'm in my apartment building in Los Angeles. The elevator door opens up. Who's in the elevator? It's Al Pacino, Beverly D'Angelo, and a real estate broker. They're looking for an apartment in my building." And he said, as soon as the elevator door opened up, Al Pacino went, "Oh, Jesus. Here we go. Beverly D'Angelo was not reading the room. She jumps off the elevator and goes, "Alec, look who it is. Alec, you're so political. You should be a president or something. Weren't we just saying that, Al? And he said the whole time, Pacino's looking at him going, "Oh, this guy? Yeah. This guy does anything he wants, don't you, Alec? You do anything you want." Beverly D'Angelo, clueless, goes walking down the hallway with the real estate broker in tow. And Pacino just walks by him, just eyeballs him. And then Baldwin says, "Al, can I talk to you for 1 second?" He goes, "What, you got something you got to say to me? What do you got to say to me, Alec?" And he goes, "Listen, I know you know about the play." And he goes, "Play? You were in a play. Tell me about your fruity little play, Alec. I'm dying to hear about your little play." And he goes, "Listen, I know you know about the play. I want to tell you a couple things. Number one, I didn't want to do the show in your own backyard out of respect to you. Number two, I only agreed to do the show for 3 weeks. And number three, and this is the truth, I've never had more fun than I did playing you. And that's the truth." And he said, Pacino looked at him and said, "Alec, how in the world can you
have fun being me. Because I'm miserable. I'm miserable. And Alec Baldwin said he put his arms around Pacino and hugged him. And he heard Pacino go, Jesus. And they worked through it.
Nice.
A little physical contact. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Let me give you a hug.
I love it.
And it healed that.
That's great.
Oh, my God, Dave.
Craig is going to be at Westport Funny Bone, September 12th through the 15th. Do yourself a favor. Go out and see him. I'll try to come to one of those shows. Good to see you, my buddy.
Craig, to see you, too. If you have room for any more stories this week, you let me know, because I have 30 more to go.
Come on back.
All right, I'll come back.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 337. If you enjoyed Craig Gass, he's going to be back on with us on Thursday. Dave Murray joined us now. Hey, Dave.
I love the Al Pacino story.
Oh,
actually, I like the Tony Bennett story, too.
He's so good.
That Alec Baldwin impression is underrated.
Yeah, that was a throwaway. That was just a set of Pacino.
Right.
Yeah, he and I have had times together where I thought I was going to die, where he will just go, he'll have Tracy Morgan talking to Pacino, who's, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he just goes, like when he gets going, he just can't stop him. Yeah, Wheels and I are going to go on Saturday night.
Yep. Nice.
Gonna have
Let's
a little
go.
Date.
Oh, cool. Good.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Yep. We'll hold hands.
Boys night.
Craig loved Wheels. Said you're a great laugher.
I mean, first of all, I like to laugh. Second of all, I think that could be my second profession. I should just go be a laugher somewhere.
Yeah, you got a
Who
good
Who needs
one?
Me for a laugh track?
You got a
Craig's
good laugh.
Got his impression of Wheels already done.
Yeah.
It's not hard. Just be loud.
We'll have to bring this up on Thursday. I've always found this very fascinating. So the reason, one of the reasons Craig can do this is everyone in his family is deaf. And so they didn't speak. And he learned to speak by watching television. And so he just has this amazing ear, and he's always told me the only voice he can't do is mine. Like, he's tried to work up a Dave Glover impression to surprise me, and he's like, I've never been able to do it.
Huh. Yours is impossible. Huh. AI can't figure yours out.
No, the AI sounded weird, yeah.
Yeah.
I have that AI voice bot that can pretty perfectly replicate anybody's, but it has not managed to get yours.
Yeah, I've always taken great pride in that.
Even close. Something about it. I don't know what it is.
Dave, how much longer does the little miniature heat wave go?
Through tomorrow. Let's take it into Wednesday evening. Wednesday still looking like the hottest day of the week. 92 for the high. That's nothing extreme, but it's a little bit of a warming trend. Again, we talked about this yesterday. There is some haze in the sky from the western wildfires. Maybe really notice it at sunset. That's when the sun will get a little murky looking. Then Thursday is kind of a transition day, a mix of clouds and sunshine. I think as we go through the day, more and more clouds taking over. It's a little cooler, 84 degrees, because what's coming at us is coming from the western Gulf of Mexico. This tropical storm, soon to be Hurricane Francine, is going to make landfall on the Louisiana coast during the day tomorrow. That moisture pocket will be coming up the Mississippi Valley. It will be fading as it comes, but it is coming. Thursday night, developing showers, possible thunderstorms, 65 degrees. Friday, periods of tropical showers, maybe a thunderstorm, windy, and 74 degrees on Friday. The focus is it's going to be a really fine line of rain and no rain. I like St. Louis as kind of the northern edge of it. And southeast Missouri, southern Illinois will definitely see some rain out of this. Hopefully, we can get a little bit. And as I like to say during a tropical system that comes up, you might smell salt water in the air. You have to really pay attention and notice it. But we'll see how that unfolds, especially late Thursday night and Friday. The weekend is still a bit unsettled. I think there'll be a couple of leftover showers hanging around as the system slowly pulls into the Ohio Valley. But a lot of dry time over the weekend with temperatures, let's think low 80s for the most part.
Fine. I like doing the weather now.
There you go. Good.
I was to the point, Dave, like I'll get up in the morning and watch my buddy Matt Chambers on Channel 4, and I would get mad at him when it was like, well, it's 99, it's going to feel like 105. I'm like, you piece of crap.
Matt, how could you do this?
That's right.
Yeah.
Now and that's part of the profession. Part of it is, you know, like if the other thing that I always ran into is that somebody was having a party, like on a Saturday night. And they did not want any rain, obviously. No rain, no rain, no rain. And even though you'd be on the air saying, hey, it's going to rain Saturday night, you know, keep that in mind. It's not going to be a lot, but it is going to rain. And then it rains on the party, and they go, oh, that Murray, he got it so wrong.
You can't wish a forecast.
You cannot wish a forecast.
That would be tough. Yeah.
Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
Because I'm weather geeking out today, mm-hmm. which I do probably more than I should. But go to Facebook, go to Dave Murray's Weather, and see a couple of pictures I shot just a little while ago of a pyrocumulus cloud. It's spectacular. It's really spectacular. They're created by wildfires, just like a thunderstorm. Mm-hmm. They can be produced by volcanoes. They can be produced by a nuclear blast in some testing of nuclear weapons back in the day. But it's really cool looking. Really cool looking.
Nice. The coolest guy I think I've ever seen, mammalian, is that what it's called?
Mammatus clouds. Yep. They look like cow udders hanging down from the sky.
Yeah. It just looks like a sky full of boobs. And
no wonder you liked it.
It was just amazing. I think I still have pictures of those.
This is glorious.
I don't know where to look.
If this isn't the second coming.
Falling to his knees.
Dave's like at the front of the boat. I'm the king of the world.
This guy is a nice rack. Look at that one. Reaching up. Want to do a couple
so
headlines?
Close.
Sure. Headlines is brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. Let's talk about the rules for tonight's presidential debate, which we have so far. We talked about it a little bit, but we've kind of haven't touched on it too much. Okay, so here are the rules. This debate will feature no live audience and no opening statements from the candidates. They will get 2 minutes to deliver closing statements, however. The rules also bar Harris and Trump from asking each other questions, allowing only the moderators for the event to do so. It's going to run for 90 minutes and feature 2 commercial breaks. The candidates will have 2 minutes to answer their questions, 2 minutes for rebuttals, and an additional minute that will be used for follow-ups and clarifications. The microphones will be muted when the other candidate is speaking, and a coin flip determined the podium placement and order of closing statements. Trump won the flip and decided to offer the final closing statement, while Harris decided to be positioned on the right. Finally, candidates will not be allowed pre-written notes or props on stage and won't receive topics or questions in advance.
I'm curious to see if they shake hands. As you guys know, it really bothered me when Trump and Biden didn't shake hands.
I am a
big believer. I'm a big institutionalist. I'm a big historical, you know, constitution and all. And so I want to see the two people running for president to treat each other with respect. You can cross swords. You can take your shots. You can punch them in the mouth, politically speaking. But for love of God, shake the person's hand. That really bothered me.
I agree. And I had the thought, I mean, tomorrow is September 11th. You would also like to see maybe some unity on that front. You know, if that's brought up in any respect, it would be nice if the two candidates could speak about that in a way that was friendly to each other and a message of unity. But we will see what happens. Okay, according to a new poll out of Harvard, the majority of Americans think the economy is on the wrong track. 63% of respondents said it's on the wrong track, while 30% said it's on the right track. 8% said they're not sure. Opinions were split among partisan lines, with 54% of Democrats saying the economy is going in the right direction, but only 9% of Republicans saying the same.
It's so interesting, because I just saw a story today, I think it was an AP story, that said the inflation-adjusted income is back to pre-pandemic levels.
Yeah, this is just a vibes poll. This is just how people feel.
But I mean, that's also a real thing, right? Because you experience is different than, say, what an average experience is. Because the average is weighted also at the top end.
Yeah. I don't know nothing about nothing, but it seems to me that prices and interest rates.
Yep.
And I know that with macroeconomics, if you push one button, it's going to have an effect over here, and it's not a zero-sum game. But it just seems to me that if you keep the prices reasonable, if you keep the prices to a level that I don't notice them, That's a pretty good indication. When I start noticing how much a can of spaghetti sauce is, that's bad. And then the interest rates. When people can't make a purchase of a car or a house, it, to me, it just slows everything down. And I understand, like, Chairman Powell and, well, if we bring the interest rates down too fast, then this happens and that
happens.
Inflation
fires up, yep.
But I think when you ask normies, those are the things that really are at the front of their mind.
Yes.
You guys want to do one more story?
Sure.
A diagnosis of sleep apnea is coming to the Apple Watch. Apple introduced the new functionality for the Apple Watch Series 9, Series 10, and Ultra 2. The watches will measure breathing disturbances. The health app shows nocturnal breathing disturbances, and Apple hopes to launch its sleep apnea detection tool with FDA approval in over 150 countries and regions.
You know, good. I don't think I have sleep apnea, but... I recently had a friend do one of those sleep studies.
Uh-huh.
I would dread that.
I don't think I'd be able to sleep during
it. I know, exactly. Like, it would, I would sleep 2 hours at best, and they would be like, you're in really bad shape. Well, I sleep different than this when people aren't monitoring me.
Right. Stop watching me. I'm trying to sleep.
Stop looking at me. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Guys, DGS, tiny short little segment here because we just went so long with all our different things, which is a good sign because it means we're having fun. Hopefully, if we're having fun, you guys are having fun. Coming up next, we have the think tank. Great day to have it with the debate tonight and Amendment 3 going back on the ballot. We have Alvin Reed, Mike Elam, so that's going to be good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Going to be a good 4 o'clock hour.
Yeah. Show's moving along.
Man, it has been fast.
Yeah.
I still can. I'm still like having problems like recovering. I'm thirsty. I'm like scratchy because I was laughing too much.
You're scratchy. Oh, your throat is scratchy.
Yeah, I'm scratchy. Start talking like Scott Farrell.
Wheels and I have a date on Saturday.
I know.
I'm excited for you guys. Boys' night out.
Yeah, no girls.
just like the show next week.
Yeah. That's not good.
Look out.